Welcome to your commercial-free, uninterrupted investment show, sponsored by the SEC-registered investment firm, Wilsey Asset Management, a fiduciary firm owned and operated by President Brent Wilsey, who has been putting clients' investment needs first for over 40 years. The Smart Investing Show has been giving unbiased financial information for over 27 years on local radio stations right here in San Diego, providing you with fundamental analysis on stocks and investments you want to know about. Now, here are your hosts, Brent and Chase Wilsey.
Well, hello and welcome to the Smart Investing Show. I'm Brent Wilsey, president of Wilsey Asset Management. Great to have you here on the Smart Investing Show. A lot of great things to cover today. We're going to talk about electric vehicle sales. Well, things have changed there. We'll talk about what's going on there. Also, too, we do try to remind you about the hype investing. We're going to tell you about a story, a company that if you didn't know the date when it was, you think it's happening right now. We'll go over that for you. And then on Friday, we did have the PCE, which is the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, came out. We'll talk about that as well. And with me is Chase Wilsey. Chase?
Yeah, as always, I want to kind of break down some different popular stocks at this point in time. And, you know, short in trading week here, but we'll still give you some good stocks to look at. One that came out recently, been, I'm going to say, pretty popular. It's Trump Media and Technology Group. That ticker symbol is DJT. Also, too, we'll look at Lululemon. Krispy Kreme had an interesting partnership with McDonald's there that they just announced. Chewy, and if we have time, Visa and MasterCard. I know they just had a settlement regarding some of those interchange fees. We chose to take a look at Visa. I don't know why. I think I have a preference towards Visa over MasterCard. Maybe I have more Visas in my wallet. I don't know. But those are the stocks we'll look at. As always, break down the fundamentals, give you our opinion on the valuations, and if it's a buy, sell, or hold, essentially.
You know, and I have only Visa in my wallet as well. I don't have a MasterCard.
I do have one MasterCard.
Do you?
It's my Citi Double Cash.
Oh, okay. Well,
but I think everything else is Visa.
And I think Visa is the bigger one. So we'll talk more about those, see if it's a buy or not. But let's talk about the electric vehicle sales, because electric vehicle sales have really not kept up with expectations. And I'm concerned for the smaller companies such as Lucid, Fisker, and even Rivian, which besides Tesla may be the only other exclusive electric vehicle company that may survive. Now, digging deep in the numbers for Lucid, since 2021, and I had to check this number because it doesn't seem possible, but they've only built 10,495 cars, and the most recent quarterly loss per vehicle was $145,824. When the company first went public back in 2021, they had $4.8 billion in cash. But as of the end of 2023, the company is now down to cash of only $1.4 billion. In 2023, the company burned through $3.4 billion in cash.
I'm like taking those numbers in. That's just not good. Sounds like a problem. The only thing that could save this company would be another $1 billion investment from the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund, as they did back in 2018 when they invested $1 billion. I really like the look of the Lucid Air. I'm going to say it's okay to me. I know you like it, I think, a little bit more. I wouldn't say I really like it, I guess. I like it.
I think it's more of an older person's car.
Yeah. It's not cheap. It's an expensive car. When I look at it, I'm like, I think I'd rather just get like the Chevy Blazer, honestly. I'm obsessed with that car. I think it's only like $40,000. I think it's over $100,000 for the Lucid Air. But also, too, just I just can't see how Lucid's going to survive here. I'd speculate by 2025, this company is going to be in bankruptcy. It's just not looking pretty. The sad part, though, is for people buying the cars today because of the great deals they may think they're receiving with the tax credits, and also, too, maybe some lowering of the prices from the heated competition in the EV market. Think ahead a few years about who will be around to service these cars. And also, too, you might be stuck with that car in your garage with no way to get them serviced. Definitely encourage people, if you're thinking about buying an electric vehicle, consider buying it from a well-known brand like Ford or GM, who will be around for years to come to service that vehicle. I mean, that's a big problem, not having somebody to go to if all of a sudden, you know, you need, I was going to say your engine repaired, you know, but a little bit different with the motors and the EVs.
And that is a difference, because these will have, and I think Tesla has this already, you know, software updates, things of that nature. Well, if Lucid goes bankrupt or any electric car company goes bankrupt, there'll be no software updates. You can have a car shut down because of technology that you can't do anything with. I in our neighborhood, I think I've seen a couple of these Lucids, and that's what I think about, thinking, what are you going to do? when this company's gone, and it's not like we can go, like for a gas car, you can go to a repair shop and, many of them around where they can still fix the engine. But for software updates and technology, there's going to be nowhere to turn to.
And the other thing I look at is sometimes people might say, oh, you know, but they might buy the assets of Lucid. I just don't think they would if they've only produced, what was it again, 10,490?
Yeah.
That's just not enough of a asset base for a company to come in and buy it and make it worthwhile. I think they would just say, no, they go bankrupt. We'll just leave everything alone. There might be some factories that are worthwhile to step in, but I just don't even know if the Lucid car would be around anymore.
Yeah, and it's a bad investment. And normally you say, yeah, bad investment, but buy the product. I would not buy this product either. I mean, I don't care if you get a deal like, wow, they gave me 50% off. I still wouldn't buy it. I think you could have major problems down the road because it's technology. It's like a computer nobody services.
And I was going to say, I mean, frankly, to be honest with our listeners, people know this. We have not liked Tesla for many years. Mm-hmm. Tesla had very similar numbers to this when they were first kind of coming out. But the big difference that Tesla had was they issued a ton of convertible debt that frankly saved the company.
Right.
And they issued a ton of stock. But it was all these believers of Tesla that got them through this period because people would buy the stock even when stock was being issued. It was like free capital. I think if Lucid came out and said we're doing a capital raise, I don't think it would get the same benefit that Tesla stock got years ago. I mean, it's something that really staved off Tesla from going bankrupt was, I think, people's love for Elon Musk and love for Tesla that gave them enough capital to stay alive. And I just don't see that happening again for other car makers.
And Tesla had two things that Lucid does not. One, they had Elon Musk, who is just a phenomenal business person.
I'm just going to say engineer.
Engineer. Okay, an engineer. Yeah, he's just a genius.
Creator.
He's. And then also, too, they were the first EV company. Now you've got so many choices. I mean, Ford, Chevy, you've got Kia's doing it, Honda, Toyota. Well, Toyota's doing hybrids, but there's just too much competition.
I think they still have EVs as a portion, but they're more heavily focused on hybrid. That's where their moneymaker is.
Yeah, I remember reading, I think 6 months ago, about the head of engineering said, no, we're not big on the electric vehicles. We're bigger on the hybrids, and they've done very well with that. So.
And the other thing, too, that we didn't cover here was, I mean, you talk about the Chinese market with BYD and now Xiaomi, mm-hmm. the phone maker coming out. I mean, those aren't here in the U.S., but if these EV companies were looking at going elsewhere, like even Europe, you have other competitors compete against. So, I mean, the EV market is not easy. And it's, I think, a business that I don't think all of those EV makers will make it through, essentially. I think, as you said, I think Tesla and maybe Rivian can get through because Rivian does have some contracts with Amazon for their kind of their vans and things like that. But it's a tough business to be in.
Yep, it really is. So don't buy the stock. Don't buy the car. Let's talk about the history of hype investing, because are people so smart that they really don't need to look at what happened in history? Well, we have said many times we stay away from the hype investments like NVIDIA and cryptocurrencies and back this up with reality. Let's go back and learn from the late 90s about a company called CMGI, which helped fund internet startups. It was claimed to be one of the hottest investments in history, and the CEO, David Wetherell, I think that's the way you pronounce his name, was deemed to be a hero and a genius. Sound familiar?
Well, keep in mind that this was 24 years ago, and the company hit a $34 billion market cap. I mean, that's a large company, again, back in 2000s, essentially. It was larger than Alcoa or Texaco, which are obviously still companies that are good size. All the financial talk shows could not talk enough about CMGI and why the stock would continue to go up and what a great investment it was. Anyone on the other side who warned about this was considered a fool or an idiot, even. They were told they didn't understand enough about the company. In 1999, the stock rose 940%. Gosh, wow, you must have been an idiot if you missed that one. And everybody wanted a piece of it. Now, is that, again, starting to sound familiar like a lot of those kind of hype stocks out there today? Well, however, look at the next year. When the curtain came down, the stock fell 96%. So, again, you were a genius in 1999, and then you were the idiot in 2000 when it fell 96%. And that was the end of the story for many investors. And the sad part is, the people that bought it after it was up 980%, and then they got a pure 96% loss. And you know that happened to a ton of people out there because they buy in at the hype.
And that's what happens on social media, the financial programs. They don't talk about this stuff when it's so low. But again, when things are up 600, 700%, that's when everybody talks about them. And they get all these pundits come on and they'll back it up like, yes, yes, I'm so smart. Buy this company. The guy's a genius. You know, they all these things come up and it keeps happening and happening again. You can say that about NVIDIA. Now, NVIDIA is a great company, but things can happen. And that's why we give you these stories to try to put things together. And I know somebody's out there saying, no, no, you're wrong. NVIDIA, this is going to be different. Maybe it will be.
Yeah.
But history will show you it probably will not be. And there'll be people down the road that lose 30, 40, 50% and say, what happened? You paid too high for it. And I believe I heard a target sell price on NVIDIA, I think of $2,000. I think I've heard. Have you heard that?
It wouldn't surprise me. And as you said, I mean, maybe it is different with NVIDIA. But the thing is, when you buy into the hype, your likelihood of success, it falls.
Yes.
The thing that I was thinking while you're talking is when you look at the CMGI company is, you know, we wouldn't have liked it when it was up probably 300%. We wouldn't have liked it still when it was up 500%. We wouldn't have liked it still when it was up 700%. And that whole way, people are saying, you guys missed it. You don't know what you're talking about. I've missed out on all this money. And then all of a sudden, after it's up 940%, and then it goes down, that's when people now start to blame other people. It's like, well, they said it was a good investment, and you know, I thought it was going to do great, and you just bought into the hype. And it's something that I think is so funny because, you know, do you think back then on CNBC, there were people that were, after it was up 900%, they're like, oh yeah, it's going to keep going higher. And people are like, yeah. Most people were probably not saying, hey, next year it's going to fall 96%.
No, I don't think nobody did.
Most people in the news are probably riding the wave saying how great it is, how great it's going to continue to be. You know, I'm so smart, as you said. I picked this company. Now it's up a ton. And then all of a sudden it falls the next year. And again, it's the small investor that gets left holding the bag because they're watching this financial program. They saw it on social media. And they're like, gosh, my friend, he's an idiot. And he made all this money, so I better jump into it. And now you lose money. You have to have a philosophy and you have to have a discipline when you invest. Otherwise, you get sucked into the hype and you're the one that loses. I mean, you almost lost all of your money in this company, essentially.
And just think
about
this. In 1 year. Yeah. And just think about this. Just do a time warp back to the late 90s. The internet was booming. Anything with .com was booming. This company helped fund internet startups. What could go wrong? That's a boom thing. Well, obviously you lost 96%. So.
Yeah, and I just always like to be clear with people. I mean, we miss things.
Yes.
We didn't like NVIDIA before, but our job is to make sure we're not getting sucked into the hype and we don't have an investment that falls 96%. I would way rather not have upside potential of 200 to 300% if that means we avoid the 96% loss. If we can, again, stick to good, disciplined investing and get that return of a goal of, let's say, 8, 10, maybe 12% on average per year, that's what we strive for as long-term investors. Chasing the hype is how you really hurt yourself.
Yes. Let's move on and talk about, because on Friday, the markets were closed, but the Fed did talk about the PCE, which is, again, the personal consumption expenditures. Nothing really exciting here. I mean, on the PCE, it was right in line with expectations. The headline number showed an annual increase of 2.5%, which matched the forecast. This, however, was above the January reading of 2.4%.
And this increase was likely a result of the energy prices as they climbed 2.3% in the month. And that's just, again, month over month from January to February. But we have, again, seen oil and gas kind of go up to start the year here. Looking at core PCE, though, which doesn't exclude the food and energy, is kind of what the Fed looks at as its main guide here. That also matched expectations with a 2.8% rise compared to last year. And that was actually slightly lower than last month's reading of 2.9% and marked the smallest gain since March 2021.
And Powell, when he came out, talked about it, he was very subdued, very like, yep, that's what it is, not a big deal. It's not like, oh, you know, this is terrible. I still believe we've been saying this, I think, since last year. Still looking for 3 rate cuts. Probably going to happen, in my opinion, June, September, and December. That's when I think they'll come out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably what's going to happen. I mean, because again, people are like, oh, well, now the inflation rate is slowing. But I got to look at it. If we go from 2.8 to 2.7 to 2.6, or maybe we go from 2.8 back to 2.9, then back down to 2.0. I mean, if we can, again, head back towards the 2%, we don't need to cut rates at 2%.
Right.
So I think that's where the Fed rate cuts can still happen. The concern is, as long as inflation doesn't creep back up to like the mid 3%, that's where we'd have some issues, and that's where I think rate cuts would come off the table.
Yeah, and I just don't see any reason at this point in time for that to happen. Now, again, things can change, but based on supply-demand issues and what we look at, still saying, yes, I believe you'll see 3 rate cuts June, September, and December.
The only thing that I think can really derail that is energy spike. And we've seen an increase in energy prices, but I'm talking about a full-blown energy spike. And while the Fed doesn't look necessarily at the headline PCE, people are naive to think that energy prices don't have an impact. Obviously, if you're selling goods or services and you're now paying more for energy as a business, you're probably going to increase your prices too. That could flow through to kind of an inflationary environment, I think, on the core PCE and the headline PCE. Don't get me wrong. There's a big difference between increasing energy prices and a spike in energy prices. I think if we kind of see energy in this range here, we'll be fine. But if energy prices were to spike, let's say another 25%, I think we'd have some issues. But I don't see that happening.
Yeah. And I see energy prices between the low 70s to the high 80s. That's probably the range there. And what I've read is that they're saying the U.S. could produce more oil if needed to be. They're still not at full production yet. The problem that we run into is refining that. That's been the problem.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so I think we'll be fine there. We'll keep watching it. Stay tuned. We'll talk more about that. And information also comes out to stay in tune with us is on our newsletter. It is a free newsletter. It goes out Friday at 5 o'clock. Go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. Again, that's smartinvesting2000.com. Right in the middle of the page, you'll see newsletter. Click the button, sign up for it. And by the way, you're not going to be hounded. We're not going to give you a call and say, hey, come invest with us. You want to invest with us, you give us a call. We like to get that information. I think it goes out now. I don't know. I think we're approaching 3,000 people. We don't have time to call people. If you want to invest with us, please give us a call. We'd love to help you out. But the newsletter is for your information to read and enjoy it. And if you have comments, give us a call.
I do check in a month after you sign up just to make sure you've been
getting
it.
Oh, you do?
It,
oh, I'm sorry.
Questions. It's okay. I'm just laughing. But again, it's not high pressure. It's, hey, you know, you get in the newsletter, you have any questions. If there's anything we can do for you, let us know. But it's, you know, I promise you, I won't hound you.
Yeah. But, and, you know, now you said that, I do remember that, because we do want to follow up to make sure they are enjoying the newsletter, to make sure they're getting it and everything else. So, but it's not like, okay, you know, because there are some things I've signed up for, and oh my gosh, you cannot get rid of those people.
I know.
This is a nice follow up call to make sure they have it. And any questions are always here for you. All right. Is it time to talk about financial planning? Is that time? Or do we do a company first?
It's time.
Time. Okay. Well, let's talk about financial planning. For that, we turn to our CFP, Harrison Johnson. Harrison, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
Good, good. I like the topic today. You know, actually, I think I say that every week. I like the topic every week. But today we're talking about the Roth IRA 5-year rules. Let's discuss that.
So there's often confusion around the nuances of the 5-year Roth IRA rules, and there are two separate 5-year rules that apply depending on whether a contribution or a conversion is made. So in a nutshell, the rule for contributions dictates how long you have to wait to access the earnings without taxes or penalties. So emphasis on the earnings. While the rule for conversions dictates how long you have to wait to access the conversion principal. So the principal portion, not the earnings. So when you make a normal contribution to a Roth IRA, you can always access the contribution principal no matter your age. So regular contribution, you can get it at any point. This is because contributions are made with after-tax funds. But to access the earnings, the account must have been funded at least 5 years ago, and you have to be age 59 and a half or older. Being just 59 and a half alone is not enough to access those earnings. The account also has to be 5 years old. And a contribution of any size will start that 5-year clock. And once it's been 5 years, that rule is no longer relevant. Now, with the conversion side, after making a Roth conversion, there is a separate 5-year rule which states that 5 tax years must pass for each individual conversion or the account holder, must reach age 59 and a half in order to access the conversion principal. Upon reaching age 59 and a half, this rule no longer applies. Therefore, if a conversion is made by somebody who is 60 or someone in their 60s, which is commonly when they're made, they can immediately access the conversion principal. Or if someone who is 58 makes a conversion, they can access that conversion principal when they reach 59 and a half without waiting those 5 years. So in these cases, the accounts still have to be funded for at least 5 years to get the earnings. But again, if you're over 59 and a half, you can immediately get the principal that was converted. And also, since the conversion rule is triggered by either the sooner of reaching age 59 and a half or waiting 5 years, a 30-year-old could make a conversion and then withdraw that conversion principal after 5 years without taxes or penalties, even though they're not age 59 and a half. So it's common for people to question whether they should make a contribution or conversion because they're in fear of, you know, locking their money up for those 5 years. But if you do it correctly, there's usually a way that you can access that funds without having to wait for it.
And Harrison, I think here's the key word or key line, the last line. If done correctly, and this is one problem that, and what a good financial planner like yourself can do is to make sure it's done correctly. Because again, I say there's a lot of people out there, they say they're financial planners, they really don't know, and they can really get people into trouble. And we've seen people come to our office where, oh, well, we didn't know that was going to happen. Well, your financial planner should have known that was going to happen, but they are not. They're not just a financial planner like you are. You don't manage money. You're on a salary. You're not trying to sell product. You're on a fee-based financial planner. You know these things.
And it is important because, again, especially with retirement accounts, if you don't do it correctly, you can have taxes, which taxes will be due on the federal and state side. And then you can also have penalties, which would be due on the federal. And some states like California have state penalties as well. So if you do something wrong, you know, you could be looking at, let's say, 22%, 24% federal tax, 9.3% state tax, 10% penalty, 2.5% state penalty. So, you know, you could have over half of your money being pushed out to taxes and penalties if you're not done correctly. But if you do it correctly, you know, contributions, conversions, they can be helpful. So, you know, you don't want to not do them in fear of locking your money up. You just have to do it the right way.
And the other thing I know we always talk about too is just because, as you said, you can access that money doesn't mean you always should. It's, you know, that's one thing I know you always emphasize is where to take money if you need it. Because obviously with these retirement accounts, the benefit is the tax-free growth. You'd hate to pull from the Roth when you had money in, it's overly simple here, but in a checking account, you know.
Yeah,
you want to make sure you're pulling from the most efficient places.
Yeah, the benefit of the Roth is the tax-free growth. Benefit of a pre-tax account is the tax deferred growth. Both of those are going to be better than, you know, a non-retirement account as far as how efficiently they grow, or and definitely a, you know, a checking account or a savings account or things like that. So yeah,
and I do know that the IRS and the Franchise Tax Board is not very forgiving. Once you make that mistake, sorry, you can't correct it.
Yeah, and the problem with that too is that it might take them a while to figure it out, but that doesn't give you any leeway. If they find you've done something wrong and then they come after you a couple years later, not only are you going to have the original income taxes and penalties, but then you could also have late payments and accruing penalties along the way as well.
They're so forgiving. Well, Harrison, as always, great information. And again, thanks for being with us here today. And we'll see you on Monday.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you Monday.
Okay. Again, as Harrison Johnson, our CFP, our financial planner at Wilsey Asset Management, he does do free consultations. And you hear things like you just talked about with this conversion, this Roth five-year plan. You're saying, gosh, that sounds pretty good, but I want to understand it more. I want to look at a financial planner to see what they really do, a fee-based financial planner. Give him a call at the office, 858-224-0004. Again, that's 858-224-0004, or go to the website smartinvesting2000.com. Again, that's smartinvesting2000.com. All right, time to talk about businesses, equities, companies. We love doing that, looking at what to be investing into. And the big rage last week was the Trump media technology, and the stock was just all over the place. Was it up like 30-40% one day or something?
Yeah, I mean, it was just crazy. It was up, and then it was down, and then it was up a lot again. I mean, it's bouncing around a lot.
Yep. So we thought, well, let's take a look to see if there's any numbers here at all on this. But we'll talk more about the hype behind it. But the symbol is DJT, and in case you forget that, that does stand for Donald J. Trump. They own the Internet Content and Information System. Based on the valuations, there's no earnings, no book value, no cash flow. The only thing you have is sales, and the sales are trading at 2,000 times earnings, 2,000 times sales. Now, keep in mind, we like to buy a company at about 10 to 12 times profit. We're talking 2,000 times their sales. Just crazy. Looking at other numbers here, there's very little here. We do see that they do have, this is kind of surprising, days sales outstanding, 24.5. Net profit margin, a negative 866.9%. And again, this just was a SPAC. I mean, it just came out, so you are going to get some strange numbers. They do have a return on equity of 69.5. I bet if you look at the equity, it's probably very, very small. There's just not much here on it. We'll talk more about it, but you're looking at buying this not as a fundamental investment, but as a, I guess I'm going to say, a vote for Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, I mean, this thing's just kind of crazy. I'm going to say is, you know, because you can still see it was DWAC, or DWAC was the SPAC that formed into it. So it looks like the DWAC at the end of 2022 was actually, gosh, what is this? It's close to $100 a share. So, I mean, if you bought into the hype the first time, you're still down substantially on it. And, you know, this year, over the last 1 year, now it's up 364%. Over the last 5 days, I mean, since it's really kind of merged and switched to DJT as the ticker, it's up 51%. But actually, from the high that it hit this year already, it's down 21%. I mean, it's just all over the place. The current price here, $61.96, you know, 52-week low, $12.40, 52-week high, $79.38. I mean, this stock is going to, I think, just move around a ton, and it's really not going to trade off fundamentals. There's no estimated earnings going forward. It's just, frankly, just a gambling chip at the end of the day right now, and just be careful. If you're buying this thing, I mean, it could go up a lot or it could go down a lot.
and keep in mind that if Donald Trump does become president, there's never been a president that held a large stake in a public company. Could there be rules that he would have to dump that stock? Possible, which would do what to the stock?
It
would
plummet.
Plummet, exactly. Well, there's the music. Doggone, I'm going to take a break here. When I come back, we'll talk about Lululemon, Krispy Kreme, Chewy, Visa. Stay with us. You'll listen to the Smart Investing Show, Brent Chase. We'll be right back. Alrighty, welcome back to the second half of the Smart Investing Show. We're going to pick up on the companies. Again, we left off saying we're going to talk about the Lululemon, Krispy Kreme, Chewy, and then Visa. So let's get right into Lululemon. What do you got, Chase?
I just want to say one thing before we get complaint calls on Monday. Us going over that stock was not to be pro or against voting for Donald Trump in the presidential election. We just want to look at it since it was hot in the news. So please don't, oh, they don't like Donald Trump, or oh, they love Donald Trump. No, we just want to look at the stock. So no complaint calls.
Yeah, I think we were very unbiased with that. I think we just talked about it as a stock, but yeah, you take it the way you want.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, don't call and complain to us because we're not promoting or de-promoting. All right, let's move on to Lululemon. And it's funny, during the break, we were talking with Chase and Frank here. I remember years ago, Lululemon had the issue with the see-through pants. Now, some people are like, oh yeah, I remember that. Neither of you guys remember that, but that was a big thing. I think that's what actually caused them to do so well was the see-through pants incident.
You know, I don't know. I don't remember. Maybe sales went up. Maybe they went down after. I don't know.
Well, I think they went up after that. But anyways, let's
move on. Actually, it's done very well. So I guess, you know, sales have gone up for a while.
And I still don't get I think now their pants are over $100 for the pants. And
I think so.
Yeah. And I know my wife has two or three pairs. But anyways, a Lululemon symbol, LULU. They are in the apparel retail. Only 2.9% float. About 93% held in institutions. P/E ratio is expensive, 32.1 versus 27.8 for the industry. Price of sales, 5.2, also expensive. The industry is at 2.2. Price to book value, 11.7. Now, this is below the tangible book value of the industry of 35.9, so that is a positive. But price cash flow is expensive as well at 21.6 versus 15.9. And surprisingly, they do have a good PEG ratio of 2.5 versus 22.3. And this means you're not paying very much for the future growth of this company. And I do believe they expect a lot of growth from this company because it is expensive. So they've got to do really well to perform that way. We do see earnings did climb by 82.6% over last year. The industry is up 29.9%. But sales, and here's the problem, sales are up 18.6%. Still good, beating the industry at 11.6%. But you can't have that type of growth on the earnings with sales in that direction. And the five-year estimate for the growth on the from the analysts here on those earnings is 12.3. That is better than the industry of 7.7. They do not pay a dividend. Take a look at the balance sheet. Current ratio 2.5 versus 1.9. That's good. Debt to equity, very good for Lululemon. 0.3 versus 0.9. That's a positive. Net profit margin, well, they do make quite a bit off of those expensive pants. 16.1% is their net profit margin. So for every $100 on those pants, they keep $16 for that. Industry 7.5. Return equity also good, 36.6 versus 31. Chase, what do you got going forward?
Yeah, so current price here for Lululemon, it's $390.65. Again, their ticker symbol Lulu, L-U-L-U. 52-week range here, $326.93 is the low, and the high, $516.39. Year-to-date, the stock has not done well. It's actually down 23.6%.
Wow.
Stock's been a great performer, though, I'll tell you. Over the last 10 years, about 625%, we'll call it. But looking at why it kind of fell is kind of interesting. I mean, their comparable sales in Q4, they're up 12% for the quarter, which, again, it's good. But the problem is when you expect so much growth out of it and it comes up short, that's where a lot of issues ensue. And the interesting thing that I thought was I was looking at the total revenue, and that was up 16% in the quarter. Very important. Comp sales is only comparing retail locations that were open on your website for the last 12 months. Doesn't include new locations. But it was a 54% jump in the international markets, but just a 9% gain in the Americas revenue. So it looks like the Americas really don't have much growth left in them. Where is that international growth going to continue to come from? Because the stock still appears to be pricing, and I'm gauging that based off that forward PE multiple. I go out to January 2026. I see estimated earnings per share of $16.02, gives us a target sell of $265.93, meaning it trades at a forward PE still over 24 times. I mean, it's an expensive company. I don't know where they are abroad, but I mean, to have 53% growth over the last year, can you repeat that? That's tough.
And again, as I said, they're very expensive pants. They have a lot of competition. And we talked about a company, I think it was last week, Under Armour. Under Armour had that special sweat-free shirt or whatever it was. And they did extremely well. What we talked about now, how low the stock is. I mean, does Lululemon really have anything special now that's, you know, and you got what, Vuori? Nike has. I mean, is there really any difference between Lululemon now? They were very special in the beginning, but now I don't see why they're so expensive.
You know, it's funny with Vuori, I never know if I'm saying it right, but maybe that's why they do so well, because people are always talking about how do you say it, so they're just always out there, you know?
Right.
But you're right, just from a pure product standpoint, it's a tough industry.
Yep. So I would, again, pants might be great, a lot of competition, very expensive. I'd say stay away from Lululemon. And I think you said the high was 500, now down a lot, but that does not mean it is a good buy at this point in time. So, well, let's move on to Krispy Kremes, because Krispy Kremes, now, they were out before, and I want to say 20 years ago, they were out, and they did extremely well. And I do remember the story, because the stock went up to about $40 a share, and it was a hype stock, like, oh, you got to buy Krispy Kremes. I said, it's a donut company. Yeah, but look at their earnings. Well, it came out that what they were doing with their earnings, they were actually including things like sale of the equipment to the franchisees and some of the franchise fees, which would be non-repeating, so they weren't really making that much money off of the sale of the donuts, and they were taken private. They came out about a year and a half ago, I think, is when they came
it
out.
It looks
right?
like it was, yeah, almost, no longer, actually. It looks like they IPO'd July 2021 at around, it looks like around $21 a share is what they kind of started trading at.
Okay, well, let's add the numbers on Krispy Kreme donuts. Their symbol, I love the symbol, D-N-U-T, I guess that's D-Nut. This is strange. The industry they're in, grocery stores. I would thought they would be in a different industry besides grocery stores, but that's where they're placed at. There is a fair amount of short on that, 14.7%, only 43% institutional owned. And the reason why we're talking about this, we'll get more into it, but they came up with a deal with McDonald's. But let's look at the numbers to see if it's going to help them out here besides the deal with McDonald's. No P.E. ratio means they're not making any earnings over the last 12 months. Industry's at 20.8. Price of sales, 1.5 versus 0.4. Price of book value, 2.2 versus 2.6. Price of cash flow, very expensive, 56.2 versus 6. They do have a good PEG ratio, 3.2 versus 7.6. There is no earnings growth over the last year. Sales are up 10.2%, beating the industry at 0.3 decline. But remember, this is the grocery industry. I don't think it's a good comparison. They are saying the analysts, a five-year growth rate in those earnings, 16.1% versus 3.3. They pay a small dividend, 0.9%. Taking a look at the balance sheet, current ratio, ooh, very low, 0.3 versus 1. I mean, that could be a liquidity problem if something were to go the wrong direction for them. I don't like it when it's below 0.6. We're 0.3 on a current ratio. That's could be a reason for it. I think maybe there's franchisees, but got to understand that. And then debt equity, 1.2 versus 1.5. Net profit margin, well, they lose 2.2% on all their sales. Industry, 1.1. Return on equity, also not looking good. It's a negative 3.2 versus 13.5. Chase, a lot here. What do you got?
You know, before we get into that, did we talk about, I was kind of digging through things. We talked about them IPOing. Did we talk about why they were in the news lately with McDonald's?
I brought it up briefly.
Okay, you did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, so.
Shows you I wasn't really listening there. But
what?
But looking at the current price here for Krispy Kreme, it's $15.24. I see the 52-week low here, $11.52, and the high, $17.84. Now, remember, again, I mentioned briefly, it looked like back in 2021, the stock was at $21 a share. Kind of funny, 2021, $21 a share, hasn't kept up there. And actually, before the news with McDonald's, it looks like it was as low as about $11, $12 a share before that kind of deal was announced that they will be now in McDonald's kind of going forward, I think fully in 2026 is kind of what the deal looked like. But going forward for Krispy Kreme, we go out to December 2025. I see estimated earnings per share here of 42 cents. Still gives us a estimated sell price of $6.97. But look at this. I mean, the estimated growth on earnings is ridiculous. This year they're looking for estimated growth of 7%, and next year 45% estimated growth on earnings. I'm presuming that has to do with maybe the McDonald's deal.
Yeah, that McDonald's deal is the big change, because I know the stock, when that was announced, I think it went up like 20, 30%, because it was, as you said, trading around $11, $12 a share. So this was supposedly good news. Now, it's funny, we were talking before the show about this, and our buddy Frank here, he likes Dunkin' Donuts well over Krispy Kreme. So. and I'm not a big donut guy, but I just never really got the big excitement about a donut. We talk about who's the guy that we know that owns that?
Donut Bar.
Donut Bar. I mean, that does phenomenal. I just don't get with a Krispy Kreme what the big excitement is. And the thing we want to look at, too, like, yes, they'll be offered in McDonald's, but what is the cost or what is the profit that Krispy Kreme is giving up to be in a McDonald's? How much is McDonald's going to take?
Yeah, I mean, because I don't know if McDonald's will sell them for the same price you get at Krispy Kreme, so then maybe they wholesale it essentially where they sell it at a big discount to McDonald's. I mean, it's definitely something you'd want to understand on the deal, because that could really not be margin accretive to the company. It could cause problems. And, you know, I'm just kind of thinking through it. When I go to McDonald's, does that mean you're going to get, you know, a coffee, I know they have the McCafe, you're going to get the McMuffin, and then a donut as well? Or, you know, is that what people want when they go to McDonald's? Is a big question mark. Because if you want donuts, you just go to Krispy Kreme.
Right, right. And I would take a Egg McMuffin hands down over a donut.
Well, you'd get both, you know, because if you were just going
to about your weight?
I don't know. I mean, you never know. I guess if it's more convenient for you to go to McDonald's, you would go to McDonald's rather than go to Krispy Kreme if the convenience factor is there. So kind of talking through it, maybe it does make sense.
Maybe.
But
yeah.
Again, the margin is the big question. Yes. On how much will this really help Krispy Kreme?
And will they be able to keep up with it? Because what's going to happen is don't think you can go to any McDonald's right now and get it, because they're going to start rolling it out in the second half of this year. But it will not be available in all McDonald's until the end of 2026. It's got a long time to wait before it may show up at your McDonald's.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I just don't get the whole donut thing.
You don't get donuts?
I don't get donuts.
I like donuts.
When's the last time you had a donut?
You know, it's been a little bit of time, but I like donuts. I just try not to eat them.
I just think they're empty calories. I'd rather have an Egg McMuffin.
Oh, man, I love sometimes a good maple bar or a good chocolate bar. I mean, I love donuts, but you eat it, and I don't feel as great after, but it tastes good.
You know, we are a morning show. There's probably a lot of people now going to run out and get donuts because of all the talk on the donuts.
You know, when I was in high school, after every football game Friday nights, me and my buddies, we would wake up after doing, like, we'd stay at my friend's house, and we'd go get donuts at a place called Peterson's Donuts up in Escondido. Nice little tradition we had there. So that's where I like to go to donuts.
Maybe I go to La Mesa, the Dunkin' Donuts with Frank here. We'll get some Dunkin' Donuts. All right. Let's talk about mortgages, real estate. And for that, we turn to our real estate mortgage expert, Robert Behick. Robert, you here with us?
Maple Bar.
Are you a donut guy?
Of course.
Well, I guess what you're selling, and I guess I just realized a lot of cops have donuts, so I got to be careful.
You're just saying you don't like donuts. You're not saying donuts are bad.
Yeah, I just don't like them. So I know we're not talking about donuts and real estate, Robert. So what is a great topic we're talking about today?
We're talking about the NAR lawsuit is come to fruition. And what that means to folks. And in a nutshell, this is going to be coming to us here fairly quickly, June, July, where the sellers of homes cannot advertise commissions that they would be paying or not required to pay the buyer's agent. And so it's sort of the wild, wild west right now. A lot of folks don't know what it means, how it's going to affect them, what's going to play. It doesn't mean that they can't. It just means they can't advertise it. So I highly respect real estate agents and the work they do. Folks don't understand all the things that they do between making sure that they're protected to scheduling appointments and making sure it all comes to fruition. And it's, you know, the largest investment most folks ever make, and it's always, always very emotional. So this is something that's going to come down to affect all of us here pretty darn quick.
And, you know, and what I've read on it, it almost seemed that it could actually hurt the consumer as opposed to help the consumer. What's your feelings on that, Robert?
So I deal with a lot of real estate agents, and they're 99.999 all on the up end. Where it gets to be a little hard for me is I'm the listing agent, let's say, and now someone comes to me and they want me to represent them. That's called a double end transaction. It's really hard to be the master to two separate folks. It just is. I don't know how you can do it.
But yeah, you're going to have bias.
Right? And so it's almost encouraging that. And I think that somebody smarter than me is going to figure it out. The agents out there, they know. I mean, it still can be paid within the transaction, but you'll see folks that are going to say, no, we're not paying an agent, and therefore their price should be a little bit less, because the comps out there have before had both buyer and seller's commission for the agent in it. So it's going to be an interesting time. And it's just, you know, communicate, over-communicate, I think, is what's going to be the name of the game.
And Robert, I remember I sold my house. My realtor gave me a very low commission. I said, well, let's do the same thing for the buyer's agent. And he goes, we can do that, but you don't want to do it. He goes, because they're going to pass over your listing for something else. And what I'm afraid of is that, is this going to be tough for the buyer's agent to where there's going to be certain houses where they're going to say, no, we're not going to show that one?
Well, now the buyer's agents, they don't have any idea what the seller is going to be willing to pay. It's not going to be allowed to be published in the MLS and the multiple listing services. So that's one of the reasons why this lawsuit originally came together, is they said that folks, which I've never saw, but they said that folks would steer folks away because the commission was less on this house than it was the other. I think that's a bunch of malarkey, but that's what they say. So,
and I was going to say, too, I mean, kind of to your point about the seller's agent, I mean, that is a worrying point because, you know, you list that house. If now they don't have a buyer's agent because they're not paying a commission on that, who does the seller's agent really have loyalty to? The buyer's agent's not paying anything, so why do they care about the buyer? They're just trying to take care of the seller. I mean, it definitely could cause a lot of problems. And, you know, I think people are going to have to be careful if they're buying homes to know where that loyalty lies, essentially.
You're purchasing your largest investment. The buyer's agent's job is one of the most tough in this whole bailiwicks of a transaction, and yet they don't know how they're going to get compensated now. It's incredibly interesting. It'll show you how, when these things happen, how people don't even really know what's going on. For instance, a VA buyer is not allowed to pay for closing costs or certain fees. And there's no way they're going to be allowed to pay for their own real estate agent to represent them. Now, I'm sure they're going to figure that out too, but it hasn't happened as of yet, as far as I know.
And Robert, this is obviously a very complex topic to make things of buying a home or selling a home even more complex than it was before. Is this something you can help people out on? I mean, you're doing the mortgage and stuff to kind of walk them through and help them understand more about this situation?
We absolutely have to have these conversations up front more often now than we ever had to before. There's a lot of great folks that can help them in buying a home and navigate through the process. And it's that time of year. Easter's the unofficial official start of the real estate selling season. So here we go.
Here we go. It's going to be a fun one for you, right?
There we go.
Well, Robert, thank you very much for the information. We'll talk more through next week, and you have a great weekend.
Happy Easter, guys. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Again, as a Robert Behick, he is president of Countywide Mortgage Lending. He's been doing this now for over 30 years. He is very knowledgeable. He's experienced. You can give him a call directly on his cell phone at 760-443-3821. Again, that's 760-443-3821. Again, give him a call for that conversation he talks about. He's a great guy to talk with.
And also, too, just a reminder, Countywide Mortgage Lending is a division of Golden Empire Mortgage, Inc., NMLS number 1104585, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Countywide Mortgage Lending is an equal housing lender and proud member of the BBB.
All right. Gosh, time is going by so quick here. I know we want to try to get in on Chewy, the dog company, and then also Visa. So let's get right into Chewy. And I guess I'm going to call this an online pet food company. And Chase, you can look at more on the details on it, some other things on it. But we're going to look at the fundamentals because I looked at this saying people love their pets. They'll spend a lot of money on pets. Pets are growing. More and more people have pets and more pets. So this I thought might be a good idea. But gosh, when I looked at it, had a great start in the beginning, and it's just falling apart like a house of cards here. So coming again is Chewy. Their symbol is CHWY. They are in the internet retail. 24.2% float short on the stock. There's a lot of people out there think the stock is going to drop dramatically. Only 76% is institutional hold. High PE ratio, not a good sign. 175.4. The industry is at 65.1. We do see here that the price of sales 0.6 versus 2.4. That is a positive. We see also the price to book value 13.6 versus 5.3. Price of cash flow 14.1 versus 16.7. Once again, a good peg ratio. I think every company we talk about today has had a good peg ratio, 1.5 versus 15. Looking at the earnings per share over the past year, we do see that they were down 25%. The industry was up 713%. Sales for Chewy did climb by 10.2%. The industry up 37.8%. 5-year growth rate on this, though, wow, 79% for Chewy, industry 15.3. And then we do see on the balance sheet, they do not pay a dividend on the balance sheet. We see a current ratio 1 versus 1.4. That's okay. Debt equity 1 versus 0.6. That too is okay. Net profit margin only 0.4%, industry at 4.5%, return on equity 7.8% versus 14.4%. Not a lot of good things here unless you have something great going forward, Chase. I think this is all chewed up.
let's start here at the current price for Chewy, $15.91. And just looking at the long-term chart of this thing, it's pretty crazy. It looks like it came out in like 2019. It looks like it was around $30 a share initially. Again, it's $15 a share now. Let's see, about 5 years later. Also, too, the crazy part is in 2021, the stock was close to $120 a share.
Oh, wow.
So it has definitely fallen from grace, to say the
least. And we know what happened in 2021. COVID.
2020.
But that was the reason, because I'm going to stay at home and so forth. And I think a lot of people were just getting their dog food delivered.
Yeah.
And they thought that was going to go on forever. So this almost like a COVID stock.
Yeah. It definitely was a COVID stock. I remember it was one of the hot at-home stocks. And I mean, even now over the last 1 year, it's still down about 55%. I see the 52-week range, the low is $15.08 and the high $40.78. So stock has definitely gotten hurt. And looking forward, though, I'm going to say I'm somewhat surprised. The estimated earnings per share here, 95 cents, gives us a target sell of $15.77. So still below the current price of $15.91. But I'd almost say this thing is fairly valued after the major correction it's had.
You know, it's funny because we look at different things just to double check. The one I'm looking at, Stock Rover, they show January 2026 earnings of only 36 cents. That's a big variance, and that's on 16 analysts.
I have 9 analysts here. So, I mean, this is why we always compare two different systems.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because sometimes they'll be off and does show a loss of 14 cents, a high of $1.08. So, this is why sometimes, and this is why we do it. When we get something like this in our office, and we've had companies who are like, wait a minute, why is this different? It makes us stop to say, what's the difference? What are we missing here?
Yeah, and one thing I was going to say, too, with Chewy, just from a consumer standpoint, I mean, I get my dog food on Amazon. I just, so funny, I used to be anti-Amazon. Now I love Amazon. Not the stock, the service.
The service.
But I just don't know why or what the benefit is to Chewy over Amazon when it's so much easier for me to order, you know, paper towels, toilet paper, and dog food at the same time.
Does Chewy have its own product, or are you buying other dog food there? I think Chewy's the own product, right?
I think they sell other dog food. I could be wrong, though. I've never gone on Chewy.
On Chewy. And again, you're right. I mean, you've got so many. And competition is so important when you're investing, because competition can destroy businesses. And this was a great idea during COVID because, wow, I get it delivered. I don't know if Amazon didn't deliver dog food back then or they didn't think about it. Knowing Amazon, they probably did not. They saw how well Chewy did. Hey, let's offer dog food through our service.
Well, I know Petco stock, and I was not done well, but Petco, I'm sure, got more involved in it as well. I mean, there's no real barriers to entry to deliver dog food to your front door, essentially.
Right. It this is so important when you're doing the investing to understand the business. And this is why before we invest in any company, it's 10, 15, 20 hours of research, because you really got to understand what is going on with it, not just say, wow, Brent Chase said the Ford PE is 10, let's buy it. Like, no, you got to understand these numbers and what's going on. And again, the variance of the two.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of different things that we think about. And sometimes the number might look good here, but not great here. And there's a lot of kind of cognitive and processes that we go through to make sure that we're actually investing in a good, sound company. Because we're not buying this company, you know, for 6 months. We're buying this company hopefully for 10 years down the road, potentially. I mean, I say hopefully. We'll hold companies generally around 3, 4, 5 years, but there are companies we've held in the portfolio. I think right now we actually have 16 companies in the portfolio. I think there's probably, 3 or 4 that we've held for close to 10 years now.
Yeah, and we'll tell you a secret. We won't tell you what they are, but actually because of how much they've moved up with the markets and everything else, I can't remember the last time we did this, made 2 sales of our companies that hit the target sell price this past week.
And to be honest, I'm pretty excited about that because, you know, we've had a great start to the first quarter of 2024. We are firm believers it's not going to be an easy ride the rest of the year. We think there's going to be some volatility, and we got some great companies on our watch list as well. So I'm excited. I'm looking for some type of pullback, and you know, we now have some cash essentially to kind of deploy it at some great companies, I think, and we can get some great prices here.
Yeah, because we are sitting on cash, and that's the other thing too. I mean, we're having our client investment symposium tomorrow, and we talk about being patient. Yes, we made those sales. Don't think because you sold something, you got to turn around and buy something. You have the cash. Be patient. Wait for something good to go on sale. Maybe it takes a week, maybe a month, maybe 3 months. Don't be in a hurry to invest in something at a high price.
And the hard part is you might miss things. But the thing is, again, you're not trying to get into something just to get a quick return.
Right.
You're trying to buy something that has the strong fundamentals, and again, that you're looking at long term. And maybe it does take you a month, maybe 2 months, but that patience pays off.
Yeah. Well, we never got to Visa, so we'll try to do that next week. There's a closing bell. Thank you for listening to the Smart Investing Show. It is for informational purposes only. It should not be used as investment advice. If you'd like to discuss in more detail your investment needs, have other investment questions, feel free to call myself, Brent Wilsey, or Chase Wilsey at 858-224-0004. Again, that's 858-224-0004. Also, too, if you missed part of the show, you can listen by podcast. Go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. That's smartinvesting2000.com. A lot of great information there. Sign up for the newsletter. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week right here on the Smart Investing Show.
I did all that, and may I say,